Patrick, mettila in mezzo Patrick, palla nostra, Suso, tira Alessio, Suso, tira, perché non tiriamo? Ma perché non tiriamo? Gol! Alessio Romagnoli! Il gol del capitano ancora l'ultimo, come Gilardino!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
Hey, what's up, guys? Glad to be here. You can find me on Twitter at Torgrud45. We also got Madison with us again.
Hey, guys. This should be a good episode this week. Go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Madison_DT.
Yeah, I'm going to start by disagreeing with you there, Maddie, to be fair, because we've got to recap a really disappointing loss in the derby.
I just keep it going, you know?
Yeah, okay, fair. Also, thank God we don't have Cammy with us, because no doubt he'd be bragging this point about how he predicted a clean sheet and stuff like that. But, we might as well dive right into it. Obviously, it hurts for every single Milan fan to lose a game like this, but I feel like there were some signs that pointed towards us losing this derby and it being a bit of a scrappy one to be settled by the odd goal or by a goal that ended up going to VAR or, you know, stuff like that. But this one was a pretty bad one. It's another game in the derby where we haven't really shown up and we haven't given our home crowd in this game something to cheer about. AJ, how frustrated were you watching it all unfold on Saturday night?
Extremely. The first like 20 minutes were real, real bad. And then it seemed like we figured it out. We got it going and we were putting the pressure on. We looked great to finish out the second half, robbed of a goal and, you know, a few other opportunities that we really felt could have changed the way the game went. And, you know, it just seemed like whatever the halftime talk was, it didn't help. We came out and Conte's team had definitely been, pumped up, they were ready to go, and we looked flat, deflated, and we just never really got anything going after that. And it just seemed like everyone, bar Donnarumma, their performance just got worse as the game went on, and we lost.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the stats, 9 shots for us in total, 16 for them, 1 shot on target for us, 7 on target for them. Possession was about even, we slightly edged it apparently. It doesn't reflect well. I mean, you look overall at the season now, we're obviously on 2 wins and 2 defeats. The 2 defeats, though, have been pretty bad ones. Obviously not having a shot on target at Udinese and then having 1 shot on target in the derby, which, is quite frankly not enough to win a game like this. 1 goal scored from open play this season, obviously the other one being a penalty. Matty, how worried are you off the back of this performance that things have started to unravel already?
Saturday and Sunday, I was very worried about it. I was like, the season's done. We're not making Champions League. But it's only been 4 games. We're 2-2, I guess, depending on the way that you look at it. A draw or a loss to Udinese that we should have won that could bite us in the end. And, I mean, Inter deserved to win that game. Like AJ said, first 20 minutes, I was like, this is going to be a rough game. Then it looked like we pulled it together pretty well. And I was like, all right, we got a game here. I thought that we were going to score before halftime. I think if we did score before halftime, the game would have changed. But going into halftime, I had a feeling that Inter was just going to come out stronger and more determined to win, and they clearly did. And after Inter scored, it was just all downhill. We looked deflated. We looked like we didn't know what we were doing. But there were some positives. I thought Leao looked good. He got to start. I was surprised to see him start. And to be honest, I don't think we should have done the 4-3-3. I think we should have kept on going with the formations that he was playing with, either the 4-3-2-1 or 4-3-1-2. Because those are his formations, and to switch back after training for, 3 or 4 months to a formation that they played with last year after trying to get them to change back to it, I think is what really screwed us. Biglia should not start for us again. Ricardo Rodriguez, I've always been an advocate for him, looked horrible. And we just really were not connecting at all.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on something there. There were definitely positives to take from the game. I think most of the positives came towards the end of the first half. We started both halves pretty badly. You know, the first 10-15 minutes, Inter had a lot of the ball. We seemed happy to sit back and allow them to cross from the wide areas, which isn't generally how Conte's teams like to play. They like to play through the middle. Obviously, they overload the midfield with three midfielders, and you've got two men up top, one of whom drops deep. But we did kind of well to restrict them to what I would say non-threatening opportunities. Balls were coming into the box that we were clearing. And then we managed to get a foothold in the game around about the half-hour mark. And there was definitely a contentious issue when Kessié charged down a clearance and whistle went immediately. Ball was adjudged to have struck his hand, or rather he blocked the clearance with his hand. And then Çalhanoğlu rifled it into the far corner. There was celebrations, but you know, people had heard the whistle. And then on replay, it seemed that it definitely didn't hit his hand. It hit his chest. So can feel a little bit hard done by something like that. And surely that's what VAR is in place to try and overturn. But that wasn't to be. Nonetheless, ended the first half well. Like I say, we didn't really carve them open very often per se. But for example, when Inter had that short corner, and Suso stole the ball and ran it about 100 yards down the pitch, and you know he had an option to the right, he had an option to the left in Liao, where if he just lays it off to him, he probably slots that in to make it 1-0. In the end, it was a heroic block tracking back from, I don't know who it was. I want to say it was Sensi. But yeah, a heroic block to stop that from being 1-0. And again, it's just fine margins. If we go 1-0 up, crowd get behind us, that kind of thing. We scored just before half time as well. The timing of that could have been absolutely crucial for us. But instead, I guess half time came at the right time for Inter. Conte got his boys in there. You know, rallied them, I guess, and they came out and started the second half well, got that goal. But just a complete fluke. That's the annoying thing. You know, he drills it into a crowd, deflects and rolls into the far corner. What can you do about something like that, apart from arguably maybe, you know, stop Brozovic being given the ball short in the first place? Second goal is kind of one that hits us on the break. But it's a good cross and a good header. You know, that's it. It was always game over once we conceded that second goal. But it does hurt to keep underperforming in this fixture. But it was a big opportunity for us to, you know, make a statement by beating them, going above them. Or even if we were to somehow get a draw, I feel like it would have proven that we can be competitive against, you know, other teams that are challenging to be in that top four, top three spots come the end of the season. Just pinpointing some individual performances. Ricardo Rodriguez, would you agree, boys, that he was pretty awful?
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. The reports are now saying that it's going to be Teo Hernandez, for the games against Torino onwards, basically, which is good.
That's the way it should be. He looked incredible. As soon as he came on, it brought a new dynamic to the game. Same with Rebic, honestly. All the subs made an impact, which is always a good thing to see, but frustrating because they're superior players to the ones that were starting over them. Well, except for Leao Rebic, that was like a debut. You know, you can't fault anyone, and Leao looked great there. But as far as, you know, Biglia on for Benacer, who never got a chance to come on, that's crazy to me. Teo Hernandez, I understand, you know, he had an injury, but there were rumors that he was going to start that game anyways, and to not do that, it backfired on us. I think that was one of Rodriguez's worst performances with Milan to date.
Yeah, and, it was.
I mean, Grant, there's the injury, so you could go back and forth on if it was the right move, the wrong move. Who was the other substitution? There was another one. I can't remember who it was.
Oh, we got Paqueta on.
When Paqueta came on, he looked fantastic for Çalhanoğlu. Mind you, Hakan, he's gotten a lot of shit this season, but he's been responsible for both of our goals, scoring the first one and winning the penalty in the second, as well as scoring that goal that was wrongfully called back in the derby. So he's been critical to us, but not as good as he could have been. So I get that sub as well, and I think Paquette is probably the right move going forward. But yeah, it's one of those roller coaster games, you know. Your emotions are high in both directions, and it just sucks when it finishes and you lose.
Yeah, it absolutely does. I think that Benacer should have came on as well. I mean, we don't have four subs, but Biglia just could not control that midfield at all. And I don't know why Giampaolo keeps on choosing him to play. But in the last two games, it just showed our weakness in our midfield, and it all went directly back to him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and one thing that we haven't done for quite some time, specifically with Biglia and Rodriguez, is you see whenever we start building up play, they pass back, or they hold the ball, slow down play, because they're kind of slower players. And you know, there's nothing wrong with being a slow player, but that's killing our momentum, killing our forward movement there. And when Teo comes on, he moves forward. You know, we saw him approach a defender and then accelerate away. That's something we haven't seen a Milan player do in a long time.
Well, it's just
Benacer moves forward as well. You know, all these other players that we have that we should be utilizing that we brought in this summer for a reason, we're not. And I'm not sure if it's what's going on with Giampaolo, but, you know, he's had a different lineup in every game this season. He's had a different formation in three of the four games. And I fully expect to see that again on Thursday against Torino. So, I don't know. Something's going on with Giampaolo. Maybe he's not confident in himself yet. I don't know, but there's definitely something going on.
Yeah. We're supposed to see Bonaventura, too. I don't know if you just said that or not, but
yeah,
I'm excited about that.
There was something saying that basically there could be quite a few changes for the game against Torino, which we'll preview properly shortly. But both fullbacks will change. Calabria will come back in for Conte, which I don't think Conte was god-awful, but I think he didn't exactly show us what we were missing. I think Calabria will come straight back in for him. Hernandez starting at left back, obviously. Then there was something about Rade Krunic getting his first start over Frank Kessier, right central midfield, and then potentially Bonaventura playing instead of Calhanoglu on the left side of midfield. And then
is,
you know,
Krunic coming in, is that because of a knock that Kessié picked up? I know he went down for a little bit, but then continued.
Yeah. It didn't mention. It just said that he could be in line to play. Whether there is something in that, I mean, they tend to base these stories on what they've seen in training or what they've heard from training. So it might well be that Kessié is just having a day of recovery or something, and then, you know, it'll be back to him starting tomorrow. Who knows?
It makes sense. I mean, it's midweek game, so
yeah.
You're gonna rest at any point.
We made a big deal about, you know, how players like Krunic are there for depth. They're there to provide more competitive depth than what we had last season and what we've had in recent years. And honestly, I'm in two minds about Kessié as well. Part of me thinks I like what I see from sort of his physical and combative and attributes, but he actually very rarely seems to do anything productive on the ball anymore. And it's more and more looking like, you know, he's just instantly looking to offload the ball either back towards Biglia or just sort of flick it down the right side towards Suso and hope for the best. So it might be worth throwing Krunic in there because, frankly, our midfield can't really be functioning any worse than it is doing at the moment. So, yeah, chuck him in there.
I have a question for the two of you guys. You know, obviously Suso is one of our most important, one of our best players. But he had a really bad showing against Inter. Do you guys think, after what we saw, would maybe it'd be smart to give him a rest against Torino on Thursday, throw in Rebic at attacking mid or something like that instead, just change it up a little bit, see if we could improve?
I would love nothing more than to see Suso on the bench and see this team without Suso, because I feel like right now we're playing through him and the entire team is leaning on him to get the ball into Piątek. And without Suso, we'll play a different game. It's kind of like when Argentina plays with Messi they completely different players, but they play through Messi, and then when Messi is taken out, they play as more of a team. And so I think that that will happen when we lose Suso or take him out. We'll be playing more as a team and more complete football.
Yeah, it's kind of like when a team has a star player like that, they tend to just go, well, he's the guy, you know, give it to him, see what he could do and let him make something. And then when he's gone, you know, they actually have to play. So, I agree with you.
I will. One thing I will say about Suso, and I've been his biggest critic at times on this podcast, and it extends beyond this season so far, it's understandable to see why that happens in a way, because since the start of the 2016-17 season, he's been without a doubt our main creative force. You know, he scored 7 goals last season and had 10 assists. Nobody really came close to that amount, you know, combined. And frankly, like I say, over the last 3 years, he's been pretty massive for us, but he's been playing out on the right. And again, it's something that we've highlighted before. It does very much feel like if our backs are against the wall, all the other team has to do is keep Suso quiet, and basically we don't know what to do with it. You know, we lose the ball so easily otherwise, whereas the best teams have multiple outlets, they have multiple goal threats. At the moment, it doesn't feel like we have a single genuine goal threat because, and I mean, you know, I'll throw this over to you two afterwards, Piontek is offering absolutely nothing up front either.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Part of why I think, sorry, Matty, go ahead.
Thanks, dude. I agree, and I think that Liao is going to change that. That's really all I was going to say. AJ, you can go ahead. Much less anticipated than expected.
All right. Well, one of the things that I criticized Suso for last season was he just kind of does his one thing. You know, goes right, cuts in, left foot, score most of the time, hopefully. And I was real critical of him coming into preseason with Chapala. I was like, I don't think he could play as a Trey Cuartista. And then he had like a great game at it in preseason. And I was like, okay, you know, I'm wrong. But then since then, he's kind of gone back to that panic mode. When things don't go great, all of a sudden he's no longer down the middle and he's drifting out right, which would be fine, except that's where our right back should be now. You know, the right back should be getting forward in these formations. So now you're displacing two players because you're side by side and there's this giant hole in the middle. There's this giant hole in the right back spot. And we saw that a lot with Conte, who it's his 6th start in 2 years due to injury. You know, I'm not going to fault him. But it was frustrating to see that with Suso and how that plays in with Piontek. I don't think he's getting into service anymore. You know, he's has that person who should be behind him to get in the ball. Piontek is not the guy that's going to create the chances for himself. That's just not the type of striker he is. Liao is, to Maddie's credit, like he said, having Liao and Piontek up there, if we could get someone who knows the Trey Cuartista role to stay central, to give them the service, to be able to create those chances, I think we're going to do a lot better. And that's not to shit on Suso. I just firmly don't feel he has a spot in these formations that we're trying to use. And if we have to keep Suso, then we need to go back to a 4-3-3 if we want any success with him. But I just don't see it working long term.
I get the feeling that what's happened is that we've worked on a 4-3-1-2 all through pre-season, and obviously we've played with Suso in that role in behind, and he's done it fairly well, but pre-season is pre-season. Players get a lot more time and space on the ball. The intensity isn't quite as high, and for a player like Suso, that's ideal because he relies on his technique purely, basically. And then we've started the season after one game. He looked completely ineffectual. Udinese found it very easy to sort of neutralise our threats in behind, and Giampaolo's panicked and realised, okay, in order for this team to be successful, we need our main creative main creative force to be in form and to be contributing with goals and assists. And if the only way to do that is to move him to being back out wide, then that's exactly what I'm going to have to do. So I think he tried to bridge the gap with a 4-3-2-1, where you can still carry over some of the same fundamentals and the same philosophies of how you would play in a 4-3-1-2. And then eventually, I think, especially with the signing of Rebic, who's, you know, predominantly a left winger or a left-sided player, I think his signing proves that we're going to eventually migrate, or some would say mutate, into a 4-3-3 again. I'm not I'm not totally against that. I think there were times under Gattuso last season where we looked like we found a balance with it, but there were also times when people were calling for other formations. That's just the way that it seems to have been over the last few years. But the one thing that I'm sure everybody's in agreement, you know, not just us three, but the whole fan base, is that Gianpaolo needs to show that he knows what his best formation is, and he needs to show he knows what his best 11 is, and that he's going to stick with it. Because otherwise, it feels like week to week, we're just chopping and changing for the sake of it. There's going to be no continuity. Everything's going to look even more disjointed than it has done already. And frankly, you won't last long if that keeps happening, because there's already murmurs that Elliott management are a little bit concerned about, you know, the prospect of us falling too far behind in the Champions League race, and we're four games into the season. So I don't know if you guys are worried about the whole situation. I was one of those who said that Gianpaolo's appointment was good because he has a fixed system and he's very, very stubborn in the way that he wants to play. And that was his main positive. He knows his system inside out, and you know how to press, how to build out from the back, that kind of stuff. But it's kind of evaporated inside a month.
So yeah, it's crazy. You know, he stuck with this formation throughout preseason, throughout training, getting everyone to it throughout the first game, and we looked god awful in that game. It was night and day different. And then he panicked and changed everything. And it's like you said, he's just been kind of piecing together, and he doesn't know his best 11. He doesn't know his best formation with this squad. And it seems like he's not sure if he wants to stick to that identity. He feels like he needs to adapt to the squad, which I understand. But like you said, that was the main reason for bringing him in. He had a clear identity, a clear game plan, and a clear formation that he knew how to work. And it didn't work after one game, and so now we've been in panic mode ever since, it seems. And it's frustrating, you know. You mentioned mutating into a 4-3-3, and I do think that's what's going to happen eventually. But that upsets me so much, because before he arrived, you know, before Leonardo left, all our summer targets were high-name, big-player left wingers. And we said no to all of them, and then we were looking for a third and fourth striker to switch to this new formation. And now all of a sudden we're going back to this, and we still don't have a proper left winger. I know you said you think Rebic is predominantly one of them, but I disagree with that. I think he's a left striker, but I don't think he's a left winger. And you know, maybe he'll be able to mutate into that and be fine. But it's just so frustrating to go another season in the same formation without a player so important like that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a fair correction, actually. Rebic played a pretty prominent role for Eintracht Frankfurt, playing just off the front two of Haller and Jovic last season. He must know what his best position is. If I was Gianpaolo, I'd be saying, look, we need this front three to be working and clicking, so all of you just tell me what you feel comfortable with, and we can go from there. But as we've said pretty much every episode so far this season, the key for us is to get Piontek firing, without a doubt. I think he's a confidence player. I don't think, and Maddie touched on this last time, don't think that penalty against Hellas Verona actually will have done him loads of good in terms of confidence. Needs to score a goal from open play, and he actually looks quite far away from doing that at the moment.
Well, I thought the penalty did give him confidence, because we saw him score an open play goal right after that. It was just called back.
Right,
but that was the type of hustle that he wasn't showing prior to that. And then given a call back, he just slumped off again. So I think he just needs to hit the score sheet.
If that penalty was actually an open play goal, it would have lasted multiple games, that energy. But because it was a penalty kick, it's a shorter burst of energy, if that makes sense.
No, I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying It gave him that confidence. He got the open play goal, but then they called it back, and then there's the confidence gone already. You know?
How do you guys think that the players are trusting Liao? Because multiple times on Saturday, he was running down the left wide open and they were not passing him the ball. Or do you think they just weren't confident that they would be able to cross the ball across the field?
I think it's both.
Yeah, I think there were a few times, particularly as I say, in that good spell that we had towards the end of the first half, where we were actually looking for him a lot. and he was taking men on and trying to get to the byline, trying to get to dangerous positions, and he looked really good. And as I say, it coincided with our best period during the game. Yes, Suso should have passed to him during that breakaway, but you know, when you've run the ball 100 yards and you've taken it to the penalty spot, and he knows that all it needs is even just a competent finish to score one of the best derby goals in a long time, I almost don't really blame him for that. But I don't know. I guess we'll see with time how everybody else clicks with Liao. I mean, obviously, there's been reports in the media that Gianpaolo had been hesitant about using him because he's not really shown that maturity, and he's a bit too raw at the moment. But, you know, trusting... I did that piece in the week leading up to the derby, basically saying that the derby is the perfect game to start Liao in, because he's going to show raw energy and he's going to be a very, very difficult player for Godin, Skriniar and De Vrij, who are a pretty, I would describe them as, Skriniar aside, not a very athletic back three. You know, they're pretty static back three that like to defend compact and like to deal with anything that comes into the area. Whereas when they have a runner that goes into dangerous areas and stretches the defensive lines and pulls one of them out wide, that's when they begin to look a little bit suspect. We saw Slavia Prague do it on Tuesday night before the derby. They had a player who, I mentioned this in the article, they had a player who's very, very similar in physique to Liao, 6'2" striker, and he basically ran their defense ragged, to be honest. They didn't really know what to do with him. And, you know, there were moments within the derby where I thought, yeah, that's exactly what we wanted to see from Liao. If he was to start now on Thursday night again and sort of have his second one in a row, then I think it proves once and for all that we're ready to instill that faith in him finally. But as for the original question, I guess we can only see with time how a relationship between him and the players around him develops. It's not easy, but, you know.
No, it's not. I mean, being a young guy in a new team, you know, it's...
On your debut in the biggest match as well.
Right. So time will tell. I do think he's going to be playing an integral part of the team, though, in the future for sure.
Yeah, that's why we spent 28 million euros on him. You know,
Right.
There is no way that we've bought him to be a player that we barely ever use. And there's no way we've bought him to be an... a late on substitute kind of player either. He's here to make an impact, and that's exactly what he will bring. The best thing we can give him at the moment is game time, his minutes to get him adjusted to Serie A, just like we did with Lucas Paqueta, and then, you know, see what kind of a player he can blossom into. That's the only way that you can really help nurture a young talent like him and hope that he irons his own mistakes out, because he's still obviously very young. And we've seen glimpses of what his ability is. So, I mean, I'm going to throw this out there now, because obviously we need to preview a couple of games. Starting with Torino on Thursday night, which is a tough, tough game. I seem to say this every away game that we preview on here, but it feels like a place where we don't win very often. And Torino...
Because we don't win away games often.
Yeah, that's because we don't true. Win...
Torino are 2 wins and 2 defeats from their first 4 games as well. So they're very up and down, as are we. They're currently above us, though, on goal difference. I'm going to start with a bombshell. I'd drop Piontek for this game. I'll throw that to you two.
And start...
I'd start Liao and Rebic up front. Yeah.
I would drop Suso and have Rebic in the mid and the attacking.
Yep. I'm with AJ as well. I think it's too risky to drop Piontek, because I'm not going to lie, if we drop both of these games, even if we get 1 point from 2 games, the target on Gianpaolo's back is going to be huge.
When Andre Silva started the second game and people were pissy then, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, not just with fans. Like, if the rumors about Elliot management being uneasy currently, if we drop these 2 games, they're going to be even worse. And, you know, I think he has to play it somewhat safe.
Plus, we're talking about Piontek needing a goal to get some confidence to get scoring again. Dropping him is only going to make that worse.
But we have seen him come off the bench for the last 20 minutes of a game and look a damn sight better than when he starts it. So, I don't know. My argument would be that the best way to relieve pressure on Giampaolo's situation at the moment is for him to play the starting 11 that he thinks gives him the best chance of implementing his system, scoring goals and winning games. I don't think you can do that playing with 10 out, playing with 9 outfield players, because that's exactly what it is at the moment, with Piontek just not even that involved in the overall play.
Right, so, I think not having Suso on the field is going to change that.
Again, I would be more skeptical about dropping, as I say, the main creative player.
But if Suso was the main creative player after Bonaventura went down, if Bonaventura is going to start like the rumors are saying, and we have like Paqueta, now we have two different, unique, and you know, creative players that have more than one trick. I think that would give us a lot more creativity.
Thank you. Exactly.
But I don't Suso think they're going
to
do that.
No. Suso's a one-trick pony. And you need a player who's going to come in and play more than one thing and feed Piontek the ball. It is so easy to shut them down right now because they do the same thing over and over and over again. Piontek's like a true number nine. He's supposed to be in the box waiting for the ball and score. He's not getting the ball fed to him at all. And so the ball's not being fed to you because we keep on playing the ball through Suso, who is the one-trick pony. We're not going to score. So I would say bench Suso, start Piontek.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. What would your starting 11 be then for the game against Torino?
Back line, pretty much enter back line, but with Hernandez.
Keep Conte in there?
Yeah, isn't Calabria on a two-match suspension?
No, one game, he's back.
It was just one?
Yeah.
Interesting. I was told by one of our staff members that it was guaranteed a three-game ban.
Yeah, I thought it was more than one. But if he's back, then him. I was under the impression otherwise. Midfield, I am going Benacer, Bonaventura, Paqueta. Up top, I'm going, take Paqueta out, put in Rebic. Up top, I'm going Leao Piontek. I'm missing one, aren't I?
Yeah, you're missing another midfielder.
Excellent work.
Okay, so Paqueta in the midfield, Rebic behind the two strikers.
Interesting. Okay. I'd keep the same back line, and I would do Kessie, Benacer, Bonaventura, from right to left, obviously. And then I'd put Rebic behind the two strikers, Leao, Piontek.
I love it.
I'm going to go change this up a little bit. Donnarumma in goal, Calabria right back, Musaccio and Romagnoli. I'd be semi-tempted to give Duarte a start, but I think Musaccio's performance against Hellas Verona is kind of like, it warrants giving him another game. Hernandez at left back. Benacer needs to come in for Belia, without a doubt. He's going to be massive for us this season. You know, everything seems to go through that player, and you can notice the difference so much when we have Belia on the field. Everything's slow and side to side. There's no confidence with anything that he does. You can tell he's 32, basically. Or he might be 33 now, I can't remember. I'd start Krunic in the right central midfield. I think there you've got a player who physically will be absolutely raring to go and really wanting to prove a point. I feel like Kessie's had an opportunity to really state the claim, you know, that that's his spot. And we haven't seen him hit the peak levels that we did last season before. Left side of central midfield, I'd start Bonaventura. I think it's time to give Calhanoglu a rest. As AJ mentioned earlier in the podcast, he's been pretty crucial for the two goals that we've scored this season. But another player in Bonaventura who will be raring to go and will want to prove a point. Paqueta's out. He's injured. So He won't be available for the game, so I'm not going to count him, obviously. I think we will play two play... I don't know, this one's quite hard. I think Suso stays in the team. I think Suso stays, and Liao and Rebic make up the other two players in the front three. I'm not really sure whether it'll be Suso in behind those two, or whether Liao will take a centre-forward role with Suso and Rebic supporting. But I have just got this feeling he's going to bench Piontek. I don't know where it's coming from. He's made comments in the past about him, his physical condition being quite a problem. He seems to take longer to recover from fatigue than other players. I think maybe keep Piontek on the sidelines and give him maybe 20 minutes towards the end of the game, especially if we're needing a goal to either kill the game off or to win the game, however it may be. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see what 11 and what formation he goes with here, because then we've got a game 3 days later on Sunday night against Fiorentina at home. We've done all right against Fiorentina at San Siro in recent years, it feels like, but this is not going to be easy because obviously it's Vincenzo Montella who's the manager. He's going to want to prove a point. It's going to be difficult because the way that they've been playing this season, they've looked like scoring a hatful of goals in most of the games. They had an absolute thriller against Napoli when it finished 4-3 to Napoli. They were really unlucky in that game. This isn't going to be an easy one. I don't know.
Did they draw Juve?
Yeah, they drew 0-0 against Juve, so they've proved that they can keep goals out against good teams as well. This one's not going to be an easy one.
No, I think last year would have been easier to call, but this year they've definitely turned around their form.
Noting they're actually bottom of the league. Drawn two and lost two, but again, more the point was more. I knew they hadn't won a game yet, but I didn't realize that they'd lost two. The point is more about the nature of their performances. They're due a result, basically. They've been playing pretty good football, but they're in a relegation battle last season. They didn't save themselves until, you know, late on in the season. I think it might have even been in it last game of the season, albeit unlikely for them to go down.
I think they were. Can I change the season on here? I'm looking on Soccer Stand and seeing if we can change the look, but they're both gonna be tough games. They've looked good this season. They have Ribery and Prince Boateng.
Chiesa.
I was just going off the my. I love Prince Boateng.
He's great.
But yeah, I think that they're good for one goal, and hopefully, we can put some in the back of the net. We need to start scoring. We don't let them in the first half, but the second half is just terrible. So,
yeah, I mean, they've conceded 8 goals through their first 4 games of the season. Also conceded 4 against Napoli. They were 2-0 up at Atalanta and bottled that lead. They conceded 2 away at Genoa in the second game of the season. The clean sheet, as I say, funnily enough, coming against Juve. AJ, are you worried about this game? Do you reckon this is one of those that we could easily lose 1-0 and everything kind of implodes? Or do you reckon we'll do them?
I think we'll find out based off our performance against Torino. If shit starts to click for us, then we're good. If not, I think we're fucked. I know they're dead last in 20th place right now, but they've scored 6 goals. That's 3 times as many as us. You know, the only reason they're in last is because their defense is shaky. But we're not creating chances. We're not scoring goals. So that doesn't help us. I mean, it helps us a little bit. We might be able to get it 1 or 2 in there, but I think they're going to batter us if we don't get our shit together.
Yeah, I really hope that doesn't happen. Right, I'll ask you both for a score prediction then for both games before we move on to the news.
I'm going to be hopeful, and Torino is going to be a 3-2 win. We're going to start scoring, and Fiorentina is going to be a 1-0 scrape by like 85th minute goal.
I I'm torn because, like I said, my prediction for Fiorentina really depends on our performance in Torino. If we get our shit together, then we could beat Torino, you know, 2-0, 3-0. We could do it if we're firing on all cylinders. If we're not, it'll be a 1-0 scrape by, and then we'll lose to Fiorentina, like, probably 2-0, just because Donnarumma will save us, but could very well potentially be 4-5-0, honestly. Maybe we'll get one or two in there, but I don't have much confidence in that game, and I hope I'm wrong. I hope that's the dumbest thing you guys have heard all week.
It's up there.
I've heard some pretty dumb things this week.
Thanks. I appreciate backing me up there.
No, I understand what you mean. This is the thing when you have two games in such a short stretch is that you feel like one has such a big impact on the other. And especially with us having the motivation of trying to put that memory of the derby defeat behind us, I feel like we're going to see an intense performance in Torino, which is going to have to be because, again, they're a good side. It's not a very happy hunting ground for us. But I see that being a draw. See that being a one-all draw. Kind of hedging my bets. I always seem to pick a one-all draw for these away games, but just the way that I see it going, I don't think we're confident enough yet to go to a place like that and win. If we are to win, as you say, I think we'll might nick a 1-0 or something like that. One thing I will say is there will be a game where shit hits the fan and the goals kind of explode out of nowhere. And because teams don't go through, you know, the first 20 games of a season averaging, I don't know, one goal per game, you know, for either side. There are games that are different that break the trend. I think Fiorentina will be that game. I don't know why. I've just got a feeling that we're going to see a really, really entertaining game. They can't really defend, but they score goals. We are going to have to try and outscore them somehow because otherwise, as AJ says, I see us losing 2-0 or something like that. So I'll say 3-2 to us for that one. And it's going to be a memorable one and a bit of hopefully a bit of a launching pad for us. So, yeah, that's it. The preview's done. Fingers crossed we get 6 points and, you know, it proves us all wrong. But what has happened since the last time we recorded is there's been quite a lot of speculation in the media already about what we might do in January to reinforce the squad. Just run through a few of the stories that have been mentioned. First one, and there's been a couple of things about this, PSV striker called Daniel Malen. Might have pronounced that wrong, but Daniel Malen is the way that it's written. Do you lads know much about this guy?
Nope.
Honestly, nothing.
So, yeah, I didn't either until I had to write about it. But he scored 10 goals in 13 games for PSV Eindhoven this season. He scored 5 goals in 1 game in the league. And he actually scored for Holland against Germany when they won 4-2 in Germany earlier this month. So he's a 20-year-old striker, bit of a rising star. Rumour is that we've talked to Mino Raiola about the chances of signing him. He fits the idea of Elliott Management's, you know, project, signing young players and developing them. Is this the kind of player we should be going after, sort of trying to unearth some gems?
No.
No.
We already have enough.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Unearthed gems that we're trying to find. We need to go after big names, players that are proven in the league that we know can score. I mean, we have one of the youngest teams in Serie A, and it shows 100%. Maybe not. Maybe like even like a player like Lukaku or Godin. I mean, different ages, but Godin was one of the best center backs in his prime, and he's still pretty close to being in his prime. Lukaku was amazing at Everton, flop at Man United. I think he's going to be amazing at Inter. Players like that who have been proven to be amazing, not players like Benacer or Krunic or Rebic or Duarte. You know, those players are hopefully going to be great, but we're signing them on promise. And we need players who can deliver, not just potential.
Yeah, Maddie, I think you took the words out of my mouth like almost verbatim. So congrats.
Dude, I think that's the first time I've done that. Normally you take the words out of my mouth, but I'm pretty proud of myself right now.
Simply word mouth grabbing.
Christ. Not quite as catchy, but yeah, fair play. No, I also agree. I also agree. I think Boban said it best just after the transfer window when he said, you know, yeah, we've signed players within the parameters that we could do. One regret is that we didn't sign some more experience, which could have helped the squad along. I think that's where we need to be looking now. Speaking of which, we were linked today with Jan Vertonghen, player who you'll probably know well, AJ, being a Spurs fan. He's available on a free next summer. He's 32 at the moment. We're thinking about bringing in someone like that, who's obviously got experience at the elite level, and could potentially form a pretty good partnership with Romagnoli. I guess the double jeopardy with that is that it keeps Caldara out of the lineup, or it would do, or you sign in a player on high salary who's just going to be a backup. Would you take him on a free, or does it not make much sense?
I would take him. I think that's the type of experienced person we need. You know, someone that's on the downturn of their career, who has been consistently at the top level, because we can't afford a top level player on the max salary, you know, for 5-6 seasons. We just can't afford it right now. So to get someone who is 32 that still is showing signs of, you know, that prime level, their top level skills, that knows how to work on a team that's might I say has been to some heights. I mean, they were in the Champions League final last season. That's something not a single player on our squad has ever gotten near doing. You know, as far as clubs, obviously Milan is historically one of the best ever in the Champions League. But as far as what we have now, dude, these guys probably can't even spell Champions League. I mean, they're so far from it. So having someone like Vertonghen would be massive for us. Yes, it'll sideline Caldara a bit longer, but who's to say that's a bad thing, you know? Let him recover a bit more. And Vertonghen's got maybe 3 more seasons in him at the top level. We keep him around for 2 on a free, and Romagnoli grows, Caldara grows, Duarte grows, Musacchio grows. I mean, the whole lot of us grow from a player like that. That's why I was so adamant for Modric. I was like, splash any cash we can. If this is a realistic possibility, we need to go for it. And, you know, I think he's available on a free next season as well. So maybe we go in for him in January at some cheap deal and make that happen. But that's the type of move we need to be making. You know, we can't afford to be signing the Krunic's of the world. I mean, nothing against him, but he's not the guy that's going to transform the team. When he was signed, not a single person said, we did it. That's the missing piece. We've solved the puzzle. That's not the type of thing we need to be doing, and it seems like that's all we did this summer. So I hope we change that philosophy in January and go for some bigger names.
Yeah, Matty, do you echo those words?
Dude, it's amazing. You like took the words right out of my mouth.
Fuck off. Oh, man, I'm getting sick of this now.
No,
thank you very much for listening, everybody. We'll catch you next.
No, I definitely think that we need to go after some big players who are in their 30s, who can bring that winning mentality to the team, like a Modric or a Jose Cajon and Dres Mertens. I was just taking a look at the website.
I was going to monitor them.
You know, good transition there for you. But players like that who are proven to be world beaters and can play on the biggest stage and under pressure in big derbies and against Juve and Roma and Lazio, you know, like those are the games that at the end of the day are going to get us at the top of the table, because when we get points over them, that's going to be a huge difference maker at the end of the day.
Yeah, I agree with what you both said there. I think the one thing that we're missing at the moment is leaders in the dressing room. Yes, Alessio Romagnoli is our captain. I think he's more a captain not because he's vocally the most involved at the club at the moment. I think he's a captain because he's been the most consistent on a performance level, and he kind of sets the standard in that respect. What you can't legislate for, though, is, you know, if somebody like Jan Vertonghen arrives next summer, who, as we mentioned, has played on the biggest stages, he's played over 100 times for his country, has been a bedrock of that Spurs defence under Mauricio Pochettino, something like that walks into the dressing room, people immediately look up to them and want to emulate the success that they've had during their career. So I think cost-wise, makes sense to bring someone like that in. I just say I might get a couple of years out of him. I know he's struggled with injuries a little bit, but yeah, if you even get a couple of seasons out of him, something like that, he can really help to bring some of these younger defenders along, because obviously we've got Duarte, Caldara and Matteo Gabbia, who in a year or two is going to want to be pushing for a starting spot. So he can help all of those as well. So I kind of like that link.
And to expand on that point, you know, we saw exactly what you just said might happen under Vertonghen when Bonucci was here. Obviously, he as a player didn't work out with us, but we saw Romagnoli become so much better that season. And I think a lot of that has to do with being around a world-class player like Bonucci was.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with that. Maddie, you mentioned Mertens and Callejon. It was a guy called Ciro Venerata who was speaking to, he's from Rai Sport, but he was speaking to Calcio Napoli 24, who are obviously a pretty big source for Napoli news, about Dries Mertens and Jose Callejon. Both of those have contracts that expire in the summer, so would be available on freeze. Both of them don't look any closer to signing a new deal. And he said that Milan are interested in both. Mertens is obviously ridiculous. He's 32, but he's already scored 3 goals in 3 games for Napoli this season. He scored 65 goals in 111 appearances since the start of the 2016-17 season. Callejon's been pretty good as well. 28 goals, 34 assists in his last 113 games. You know, both these know the league well. They've been part of the most successful Napoli side of for the last 30 years, probably. If we got a chance of even getting one of these two, do you reckon we should go for it?
Yeah, all in. Like you said, Mertens is an animal. I mean, he's got more goals in less games than our entire squad has. So that's obviously, you know, that's a bit of a joke, us having two, him having three. But still, I mean, the point stands. He's got that attacking mentality. He's fast as shit, and I think he could play in really any of our front three roles, whether we go to a 4-3-3 or we stick to a 4-3-1-2. I think he could play the striker, the Trequartista, a center forward, a winger. I mean, he could really do anything offensively. That's the type of player we need.
100% take it. Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. The record speaks for itself there, and free transfer, you can't really say no. But I don't think we have a chance of signing either of them, to be honest. I think it's very unlikely that they both leave Napoli on a free transfer, and whoever it is who does leave will have teams in the Champions League after them, probably. But who knows, that might be us next season. That's what we've got to hope.
And but finally, it also depends on if they want to stay in Italy or if they want to go abroad, you know.
And also, we could probably offer more wages. Not sure about that, but potentially might be able to offer a longer deal. Napoli might only offer 2 years. We could come in with 3.
Right.
Not sure. There might be something in that. We'll see. Final rumor is a replacement for Conte in January. Andrea Conte, who hasn't really impressed from what we've seen of him under Gianpaolo. Sergio Aurier and Santiago Arias of Atletico Madrid are the ones who've been mentioned. Would you take either of them as a potential, you know, competition for starting right back / backup spot?
Yeah, I would take Sergio Aurier. I really liked him all the way back when he was at PSG. His one downfall has been his behavior, his attitude. That's what got him kicked out of the PSG squad. It had nothing to do with performance. And I think that's also why he's been getting less time at Tottenham. He's still solid. Obviously, Danny Rose is a fantastic right back as well. So we'll see what happens there. But I think it's admirable of Conte to want to stay and fight for a spot. But I don't think it's the most beneficial option for us right now. And you know, Calabria is a fantastic right back, one of the top 5 in the league, if not better, you know. But he's young and he makes mistakes still at times, and they can be costly. Like, I mean, I'm not going to use a red card against him because I disagree with it, but there was a lot of examples last season that we could probably search the internet for and come up with. And I think Aurier is on his level, if not better. So it would be an improvement, at least depth-wise at the very minimum, if not overall.
I agree. I think Aurier would be a good depth signing. I think Conte has been... just his injury has completely depleted him, and he hasn't been able to get back on the boat. So I think it's time to move on. Maybe have him as third string. I don't know what his wages are, but I assume that too much to have him as a squad depth player. So get him out of the club and move on.
Yeah, I feel sorry for Conte in a way. His career has been, you know, kind of disrupted by pretty severe injuries. But I also just don't really see a place for him to challenge moving forward. I think Calabria, to give him credit, has been one of our most consistent performers, particularly when things were good under Gattuso last season after Christmas. But I think with Conte attracting interest from clubs like he did in the summer transfer window, if those offers are still around in January, he should definitely look into it and go somewhere where he's going to be a guaranteed starter. And I would take either of Serge Aurier or Santiago Arias, who I really liked when he was at PSV, take either of them to come in and probably be a deputy at first, but after a while, potentially challenge for a starting spot. So yeah, I don't mind those links at all. Right, let's move on to the questions then quickly. We've got a few to run through. So we'll start with Mitch at No Swagowski, who's a loyal listener and comes up with some pretty good questions. So throw this one to you first, AJ. Is it fair to criticise Piontek at this point in the season for his scoring struggles? Or does the blame lie primarily with a system that hasn't gotten off the ground yet?
I think both are reasonable conclusions if you come to either one on your own. But, you know, it's only been four games. But at the same time, if we look at, you know, how he ended the previous season, he wasn't shooting on all cylinders either, you know, to end last season out. I don't know exactly when he got his last goal. Like, I can't remember when it was last season, but it took some time, you know. Or he missed a few games. Sorry, I was Googling and trying to talk at the same time, and that's really hard to do. Yeah, he wasn't doing too hot at the end of the last season, and he hasn't started hot this season, so it's fair to criticize, but I also do think the system's playing a big part in it.
I agree. Earlier I said that he's a true number nine, which means you have to feed him the ball, and the ball is not being fed to him. So I think once the ball starts to get fed to him, he will start scoring goals again.
Yeah, I would like to see how Piontek plays after he scores a proper goal from open play. I know I've said that I would drop him for the Torino match, but that's purely just to see if another combination of forwards works and makes us look more threatening. I think there's a combination of perhaps him not giving it 100% while he's been playing this season, and he's playing in a system that hasn't created chances for him, and that's going to make him look, you know, more ineffective than usual. So yeah, I want to see how he does after he scores a goal from open play, which he will, because naturally he's getting into good positions still. Brian Johnson at Wise Old BHJ asks, are we ever going to win another match?
No.
Yes. We will win another one eventually. Don't know when, but we'll get there.
Yeah, if you'd have said, are we going to win a match in the next week, I'm not sure I'd have been able to answer that with the same level of certainty. But I understand, he's kind of encapsulated the frustration of the fan base at the moment. It does feel like we've regressed a little bit in say that with a bit of hesitancy. But yeah, I understand the question there. Eddie Milanista at Lord Double D asks, hey fellas, what changes do you expect to see in a Torino match? Who should be the attacking three and in what formation? So we kind of touched on what our starting 11s would be for that game. Don't expect Hulls, I mean, I expect three or four changes to the starting 11. And it's interesting, obviously, having two games in a week to see how he manages the workload of the players. But yeah, I guess we kind of mentioned that earlier. Tio Diplas, at Theo underscore Diplas, asks, why are people still insisting that Suso is our best player? He can't play the number 10 position and he's too predictable. Who would you put in his spot?
Well, that's what Maddie and I basically went into already as well. But yeah, I'd put Rebic. I do think he's, I don't think he's our best player, but I do think he's our most critical going forward. But also he's just not clicking in the new formation.
I think, as you say, it was kind of touched on earlier. I still think Suso is important to us and he will have an important part to play this season, but Gianpaolo needs to figure out exactly what he wants to do with him, what system he wants, where he wants to put him. If he really does want him to be pure attacking midfielder number 10, who doesn't drift out wide as much, that kind of thing, needs to work very, very hard in training to try and turn him into that player. If it doesn't work, I'd consider sacrificing him in January to get somebody who can play that role. But I guess
I have an idea for how to keep him from going to the right. You know how, like when you're training a puppy, not to bark, you put like a shock collar on him? Do that, but it shocks him every time he drifts out wide.
That's a good idea. I mean, Jermaine Pennant played with an electronic tag around his ankle when he was, on whatever it is, when you come out of prison. But yeah, do that for Sousa. Maybe not around the neck. That might be a little bit harsh. But yeah, I'm all for that idea. Christian Espinosa at Purple Buckets asks, what is Gianpaolo's system supposed to look like? What kind of players should I look out for where I can tell that progress is being made? So another question there that kind of encapsulates the frustration of the fan base at the moment that we're not really seeing massive progress, that kind of thing. What's his system supposed to look like? I guess, we don't really know at the moment. It was a 4-3-1-2. We seem to be pretty set on that being the formation moving forward. And then after one game, it switched to potentially being the 4-3-3, but we ended up playing a 4-3-2-1. And the last couple of games have, been anybody's interpretation as to how we set up on the pitch.
Well, I think we do kind of know what a system's supposed to look like based off last season at Sampdoria. You see the fullbacks getting forward pretty often, and you see that attacking mid being critical to the system. That's the guy who's receiving the crosses and then feeding the ball. What we're doing now is we're making these overlapping runs, but then we kind of hold the ball, we wait a bit, and then we just cross it either into the other fullback or into the striker and just hope for the best. But that's not exactly how Gianpaolo used to do it. It was go up, three quarters of the way, get your Trequartista, and then either, create from there or get to the striker and score. And that's not what we're seeing anymore. I feel like we just keep going back to it, but Suso's just not quite ready to fully encompass that Trequartista role. And that's why we're struggling with the crosses into him, because he's the one who wants to take the cross. So he's getting out wide, disrupting Calabria or Conte or whomever. And then he's leaving that gap in the middle and we're not getting the creativity.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty damn good response. Maddie, anything to add?
Yeah. No, I think that was great.
This is a good question from Joseph Calvo. Joseph underscore Calvo 13. 5 games from now, where do you see Milan in the standings?
Give me a second. Let me look at our next 5 games.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking the exact same thing.
Torino, Fiorentina, Genoa, Lecce, and then Roma.
Oof. So we will be, I will say, 6th.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair, because I think we'll definitely beat Lecce. Torino and Genoa, probably, but they're tough. Fiorentina's hit or miss, and Roma's going to be a tough one if everyone's form continues as is.
Yeah, I'm going to go Torino draw, Milan win against Fiorentina, so that's 4 points. Genoa draw, Lecce we win, so that's 8 points. Roma away, lose. So 8 points would take us on to 14 points from 9 games. That'd probably have us 7th or 8th, something like that, which wouldn't really be good enough, obviously. But then we got Spal at home after that. That's when we hit that tough stretch of having Lazio, Juve, Napoli, you know, three games in a row. That's going to be a really, really tough tough stretch for us. So we need to get points on the board early and often, so we can kind of go into that with a bit of a free shot. But that's a pretty good question. Obviously, always looking ahead to the bigger picture. This one comes from Mohamed Kwazim at Gloomzo. Will Gianpaolo be sacked after the next two games? And did he get his chance after 4 months?
Well, I do think they're critical, right? Those were the two games that Elliot was really looking into, if I remember reading that piece correctly that was on the site today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's very possible. If it does happen, though, my only worry is that we go backwards. You know, we either get Gattuso back or we sign another kind of mid-table manager and hope it's his breakthrough season. You know, hope we discover another gem. We're kind of the exact same with the players. At this point, just get someone who knows how to fucking coach football. Like, let's just make sure we know we're doing the right thing. Allegri, Mourinho, Arsene Wenger, I mean, Spalletti. There's so many managers available. Just splash the cash, pay what you got to pay, and get someone who could support us and help us out and take us to that next level.
Yeah, one thing I will say is that us missing out on Conte and missing out on Sarri, who were two of the managers who we were reportedly in for, now looks more and more criminal as time goes on.
And the reasoning was money, correct? It was wages?
I think Conte wanted like $10 million a season or something.
Yeah, I know Conte was being offered a shit ton by Inter, and I think Sarri was just kind of set on Juve from the get-go, but I feel like money played a role in both of those.
Yeah, I think so too.
Mm-hmm. Another one from Joseph Calvo. This is a pretty good question. What one player for 40 million euros or under should Milan sign to, well, potentially ensure Champions League qualifications?
Under 40 million, one player to make that big of a difference? I don't think there is one.
I don't think there is. We have to spend probably at least 60.
Yeah, I mean, we could go for like Everton Suarez, who I think they're saying 45 to 50. That would be a huge boost creatively. Attacking-wise, just all around would be huge for us. But Torreira was 50 or so. I mean, that would have been a solid midfield addition with someone who knows the system like the back of his hand. He would be starting over Biglia. He wouldn't need this grace period that Bennacer is getting by not playing. You know, there's players like that that I think would do it, but I don't know if we could get any of those under 40.
Yeah, I would say it's a tough one. Obviously, you know, a 40 mil player is its objective now as to what they can actually bring to the table. I like the idea of signing someone like Memphis Depay, who can play any of those forward roles. Failing that, I think we should go for somebody in the midfield who's really going to make a difference. But I'm not. Problem is, I'm now not entirely sure who that is. So as a result, I'm just going to stick with Memphis Depay on that. I'd be half tempted to say Demiral from Juve, but I really don't think a centre-back is going to fix the actual problems with the team at the moment. So,
yeah, I'd say, I mean, that's not where our problems are right now, I don't think.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, because I'd say Moussakio was such a weak link last season, but he's actually done great so far. Maybe not great, but definitely better.
Yeah, definitely better. Yeah, it was a good question, that. And finally, this one comes from at being Kits. Who's performed worse so far this season? I feel like that ends the podcast on a bit of a negative note, but it's a fair question because there have been a few underperforming players so far this season. I'd be tempted to say Belia because we rely on his experience so much, but he hasn't provided what we needed him to provide. And that goes for, you know, since he arrived, not just this season. And we realise how much more useful Bennacer is when he's in the team. But honestly, I'm going to say Ricardo Rodriguez. Like, his regression has been pretty staggering to watch for me. I don't think he attacks or defends well, and I can't wait to see Teo Hernandez in there.
Yeah, I'm torn between both the players you listed. My initial thought was Ricardo Rodriguez for exactly what you said. I mean, when he was at Wolfsburg, not the last season, but when he was playing a left back at Wolfsburg, he was one of the most highly sought after left backs that was available. And then he, of course, switched to a center back and they got relegated. That's why we got him so cheap. But we've seen him just get worse and worse every season with us. It's weird. It doesn't make any sense. That's not how players get. So I wonder why that happened. Maybe it's something with us. Maybe it's because we've changed coaches every season he's been here. I don't know. But then the other idea is Bigley, because like you said, he's that position that he plays really is the most important one in a lineup. You know, it's dead middle of the lineup of the pitch there. You're supposed to control, create, defend. I mean, you're supposed to do everything. And after his injury, he just was never the same either. He was great before it, but I'd say he's been pretty shit this season so far.
I'm going to say Bigley only because we depend so much on his leadership and role in the midfield, and he has not delivered on any of that.
He was signed to be the vice captain, remember?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember writing a feature when he signed saying that he could be the key to everything that we want to do. And he, like I say, just hasn't been that. He'll go down as one of the biggest transfer disappointments. I think we got him probably a year too late from Lazio. But, you know, it is what it is. Some work, some don't. But now it's all it proves is that it's time for Bennacer and time to look to the future. So it's maybe a blessing in disguise in that sense. Yeah, but that's everything. So thank you to everybody who submitted questions. Obviously, we'll answer more next week, probably based on yet more outrage after we've lost both games. But of course, thank you for listening to this episode as well. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher or at Kilpin Chronicle for some more explicit Milan-based rants. And I've been joined once again by Anthony Torgrude.
Yeah, it was a fun one. Really negative, but still a fun episode. Glad to be able to vent with you guys. And follow me on Twitter at Torgrude45. And I don't know, talk shit to me there or something. Oh, and we got Madison too.
Oh, just don't forget about me. Was I wrong or was this not a great episode?
I genuinely forgot episode. About you, sir.
You guys can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Madison_DT.
Yeah, thank you very much for listening, everybody. And we will catch you in a week's time.
Abate la rimette dentro, esce Radu, porta vuota, gol! Gol! Abbiamo battuto il gatto nero, li abbiamo battuti tutti Alessio, grande Alessio, è bella la vita, lava quella zolla Alessio, lava la quella zolla Alessio, lava!